The Batteries Included podcast is brought to you with United Chargers. United Chargers presents the Grizzly range of EV chargers. There's the original Grizzly Classic, a powerful, heavy-duty, portable EV charging station built to withstand the toughest conditions. The Grizzly Duo, a dual-port unit designed to charge two vehicles at the same time. The Grizzly Mini, a small, portable charging station built with an indoor-outdoor-rated cast aluminium enclosure. And the Grizzly Smart, a revolutionary smart EV charger. All Grizzly chargers come with a convenient 24-foot cable and the ability to adjust the current from 16 amps all the way up to 40 amps. That's 9.6 kilowatts. Plus, they're IP67 rated. Built in Canada with the highest quality materials, order yours now at unitedchargers.com. That's unitedchargers.com.
Hello and welcome to the Batteries Included podcast. It's April the 12th, 2024, and this is episode number 32. Thank you very much for joining us. On today's show, we'll be talking about the Mercedes EQS sedan, getting an upgrade that's definitely not a refresh. Ford Mustang Mach-E upgraded for 2024, also not a refresh. And Ford cutting prices on its F-150 Lightning as it goes back on sale. And of course, much, much more. I'm Dominic Ioni. Joining us today is the cool and collected Mr. Tom Malogny, a senior editor at Inside EVs and host of the YouTube channel State of Charge. We also have the meritorious Mr. Martin Lee from the EV News Daily podcast, which is available on all the best podcast platforms. And of course, Kyle Connor joins us from the majestic, practically palatial halls of Outer Spec Studios, where he produces high voltage videos for a number of YouTube channels. Hey there, everybody.
Good morning.
Morning, guys.
Good to see you all. Hey, do I sound okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Something happened during the intro. My sound like totally changed.
We can hear you.
Okay. Awesome. So I guess let's kick this show off with the EV News Daily weekly reporting roundup.
Well, while we're on the air, last week, a Reuters report said that Tesla had halted the project to develop an affordable electric vehicle and rather plans being diverted towards robo-taxi technology. Reasonably well-sourced Reuters report as well, talking to multiple people in the company, talking about how they've been asking suppliers to slow down or even pause anything to do with the affordable so-called Model 2 $25,000 Tesla, what you will. Elon Musk was quick to say Reuters is lying on his social media X network, but then some hours later would tweet RoboTaxi unveiled 8th of the 8th. So we don't know what the Reuters lie was, but we know that RoboTaxis will be something on the 8th of August, whether it's a vehicle or just the plan. Tesla's pivot towards focusing on robo-taxi development, though, is a high-risk strategy. This project faces significant technological and regulatory obstacles as regulators around the world are starting to understand autonomy and driver assistance systems, and entering now with any kind of robo-taxi is going to be, some say, years away from any kind of approval as regulators start to catch up. Well, Tesla has reintroduced the options for free full self-driving software transfers to new vehicle purchases to encourage new people to buy that stock. And Kia outlined its mid to long-term EV strategy, aiming to become a leader in the global EV market at their so-called Kia Day event in Seoul. The company reaffirmed their target to sell 1.6 million EVs every year by 2030. The Finnish company Kempower introduced a cutting-edge charging system for electric trucks, boasting over 1.2 megawatts of power. But having to bundle both the MCS and CCS2 connectors because, well, they said that was because it was for compatibility. But I believe, correct me if I'm wrong in the comments, MCS is not fully standardized by Charin. I could have researched that before the podcast today, couldn't I? Zeekr updated its first model, the 001 EV, with a new CATL battery with more LiDAR, more driver assistance, an 800-volt architecture, but a 10 to 80% charge time of 11.5 minutes. That is a peak of 546.4 kilowatts and a sustained 500-kilowatt charging pretty deep into the pack. Mercedes conducted extreme weather testing of their electric G model on the frozen lakes in Arjeplog in Sweden, and later this month in can I put you down, because if you stand on the wrong key the whole show goes off the air.
Now she's all caught up, it's all gone wrong.
There you go. Go and play in the garden. I don't know where I was. The G electric G will be unveiled later this month in China at the Beijing show. Hyundai's US CEO Randy Parker laid down the gauntlet, really, to his competitors, the likes of Ford and GM, who have been a little bit lukewarm on EVs lately, questioning the sense in buying an EV from any brands that aren't going full EV. Of course, Hyundai, Kia, Genesis, headlong into EVs. A bit of a war of words there. Ferrari inaugurated a battery-focused laboratory on lithium technology, aiming to launch their own fully electric supercar towards the end of next year, I believe, but sharing that knowledge with their suppliers. Tesla achieved significant advancements in the speed of supercharger deployment, talking about their prefabricated supercharger units, the PSUs. Just 4 days now from when they're built on that slab at Giga New York. Obviously, there's lots of stuff to do before you have a supercharger location. You've got the land and the grid connection and permits. But in terms of the actual prefabricated units, just 4 days from turning up to having them connected and drivers charging their vehicles. I believe that's half from the last time I checked. EV retail in China for last month in March was 41.6%. Now, that does include plug-in hybrids, and in China, it's about 60-40 split in favor of BEVs. But how about that? What's this story about people going lukewarm on EVs? 41.6% EVs in March in China. That's up from a bigger increase, actually, from February. The Mustang Mach-E 2024 model year had significant upgrades, new rear motor, faster DC charging, and a revamped GT model as well. Tesla's enhancing the Cybertruck fast charging capability by 20% with an over-the-air update to improve the charging curve. We know that from Drew Braglino, because he was joining in with a conversation with our own Kyle Connor and Brandon Flash on X. And so it's nice to see that he managed to respond to Kyle, and we got a good scoop out of that. Rimac's technology is going to be helping BMW with the cylindrical cells they need for their upcoming Neue Klasse vehicles made in their Croatian factory. Hyundai's first three-row SUV, the Arniq 9, has been seen this week driving around the streets of California. Surely that means it's going to be soon. It's their version of the Kia EV9. Mercedes-Benz EQS electric saloon was updated with a bigger battery, another 51 miles. That's 511 miles on WLTP, but an all-new front end resembling, well, it's an S-Class, basically, going away from that futuristic styling to, okay, have a chrome grille and a standy, uppy Mercedes three-pointed star, because that's what our buyers want. Ford announcing a reduction in the price of the F-150 Lightning 2024 model year by prices going down up to $5,500. And Alfa Romeo introducing the Milano this week, its latest SUV, kind of crossover, small car, and it's their first series production electric vehicle. Boy, it's been a busy week for news, and it's fantastic to talk about that at the beginning of the show, as always, and some positive news in there. So much going on. Hey, one of my patrons, who is obviously someone who then funds my podcast personally, so I would class them as a pretty big fan of, you know, or at least interested in what I do, said, hey, I found that you guys have got your own podcast going on now. I wonder where you'd gone. And it was a reminder that maybe not everyone realized we moved on from Inside EVs almost a year ago. So if you do one thing for us this week, please share this show, maybe while you're watching it, maybe while you're listening and watching. Just grab that share button and share it with people, friends, family, who you think might be into EV, someone who thinks that this show might be useful to them, or they'd learn something, and that would really help us out, build the podcast, and maybe even remind a few people, hey, we are still here and have been for a while, and that's your news.
All right. Thank you so much for that, Martin. That was great. Your office looks, your studio there looks a bit different today. I understand there's you got some meteorological weirdness happening in the UK.
Yeah, we have an event. We have an event called Sunshine. I mean, you can't really see that, but we have something in the sky that resembles a warm, glowing ball. And we haven't seen it yet this year, so I've opened the windows.
Earthquakes in New Jersey, sun in the UK. What's next?
Dogs and cats sleeping together. Who knows? Oh, nice to see your kitty there too. That was awesome. So I guess let's have a look at what our podcast crew has been up to this week. Hey, Kyle, I wanted to get into what you did last weekend, but first, you had a BMW i5 on loan this week, and you are super stoked about this car. And so, like, I don't know, what have you done with it this weekend? What has you so excited?
I've been lucky enough to drive i5 quite a bit. I went and drove it in Europe when it first originally launched, and now the US cars have started to arrive. So we've arranged to have it for a couple weeks at the office. It's actually still there. I have not spent much time with it, but I will this weekend. So as soon as I'm back today, I'm in California right now, I'm going to make a video with it. So that'll be interesting. We've done range testing, charging testing, 10% challenge, and hogback with the team. But I haven't really had a chance to spend that much time. The i5 is sort of the perfect blend of what a BMW needs to be. You know, it takes the sporty elements from the 3 Series and the comfort elements from the 7 and kind of meshes them together a bit. I would say the 5 Series almost subscribes a bit more to the 7 Series luxury vibe than more sporty, but it's been a great car. It finally looks good, I think. The one that we have is optioned up with some nice options, but nothing crazy. It's just a rear-wheel drive variant, which is, I think, all you need, and the one I prefer to drive. So nice car, very comfortable, pretty quiet, great ride, really nice ride. And, you know, acceptable performance everywhere. It's just, you know, 5 Series doing what a 5 Series needs to do. There's not much to complain about.
Right. I saw it at the Electrify Expo a few weeks back, and it's got a very, you know, mature executive vibe to it, to me, you know? Yeah. So, but it's interesting. It has like this sporty element to it that, you know, excites you as well inside that kind of a package. So
It's like sporty to a point because it overheats real quick if you drive it hard.
Right.
It like hits a thermal limit, like whoop, like after a minute.
Okay.
So yeah, not that sporty.
All right. So also yesterday you drove the Hyundai Ioniq 5N at Laguna Seca, one of my favorite tracks. But you can't give us any driving impressions yet. So when does that embargo drop? And
Tuesday, I can tell everyone. It's not very long. Keep in mind, the car's been on sale in South Korea since September of last year. It's been on sale in Europe now. And so this is more or less just a chance to let the US guys catch up. But one thing I just thought was so cool was, you know, I had a chance to talk to a lot of the engineers on this car. It's a dream day for me. It's a day at the track. So anytime we can go rip around, I'm cool with that. And just had a really amazing time out there. Set some records around their little circuit, which was cool in the car as well. So I was pleased with that. And the car is insanely high quality in terms of the amount of effort that they went to put into making it sporty. You know, things that I can tell you that are not driving impressions are, it's not just an Ioniq 5 that they've added performance bits to. They've gone all the way down to the body in white and added welding points and added more structural adhesive. Every single suspension component is completely changed from the standard car. The steering is completely changed from the standard car. The interior is changed from the standard car. So everything is just interestingly upgraded. And I think the only thing I can't say is driving impressions. So the price, I have to look at the exact number, but it's like $66,100, which is about $10,000 to $15,000 less than I thought it was going to be.
Right. Well, it has to be competitive with what, Tesla Model 3? I mean, this seems to me like a little bit spicier than Tesla Model 3 in a lot of respects, though, right?
I can't say because the Model 3 performance is coming out soon, the new one especially.
Sure.
So it's hard to know that. But I will say this makes a lot more power than the current Model 3 on paper. And still an SUV though, right? So like I can talk about seating position because it's not driving yet. You can sit in there without driving. You still sit pretty high.
Okay. It's a little odd for like a racy car.
Yeah, I was just like to the engineers, I'm like, how do I just get on the ground?
Right. And it's also a bit lower, right? The suspension is a bit lower than the regular one?
Yeah, about a half inch all around lower, but still leaves room for, you know, like clearing obstacles. Still a 6 inches of ground clearance.
Okay, that's a lot.
It's still pretty high up there. Has a limited slip diff in the back. Has a this interesting dual stage inverter technology that's silicon carbide, but they have like almost two inverters for each motor. And I'm not 100% sure how that works or how they switch between or when they switch between, but that's kind of interesting to hear about. But of course, it's got a bigger battery than the standard Ioniq 5. So it's 84 kilowatt hours, which is my understanding, just the new upgraded sort of refresh battery that all the cars will get next year. Nice. But it's nice that this one has it. And I think it's 222 mile EPA, pretty low in the EPA cycle.
Okay.
The efficiency was not the target for this car. The aero is they're like, we're not pleased with our CD ratio, but we are pleased with the cooling ratio. So there's just intakes of air everywhere. It's wider to accommodate the new front tires, and braking package is very large as well. But this thing can do, it's the first EV that can really do two flat out laps of the Nürburgring without thermal derate.
Two laps,
not just one. Most EVs can't even do one.
Right. No, so yeah, I'm saying two laps. That's really good. Actually, the Porsche Taycan, the GT, can do one lap for sure. Can it do two?
Probably not.
Wow. So that's pretty decent then.
But keep in mind, that's making 1,090 horsepower.
True.
Yeah.
True.
And this is making 600.
It ended its Nürburgring lap just off its thermal limit, which I forget what the temperature was, but it was hot, 150 something. And it was at its peak.
I don't think I can say what I got the temperatures up to yesterday. Yeah. That might be an impression. But it seems like they're saying the cooling is improved.
Yeah.
And there's also a pre-chilling feature, which is nice. So very similar to like Taycan Turbo, Turbo S, Turbo GT. You can pre-chill the drivetrain in between lapping sessions, which is great. And I saw the Pikes Peak car last night as well, spoke to the driver. Paul Dellenbach, who's driving the Pikes Peak car, and I spent the time out on track yesterday together, which was a really fun experience to work with him on a lot of those things. So he is driving the Ioniq 5N sort of factory car. There's a few things they can do for Pikes Peak. They're trying to set a production SUV record, so they have to cage it. They have to, they took the interior out, but it is largely a stock car. They're just going to run Yokohama tires.
Wow.
And send it.
Oh, right, that's cool. The Ioniq 6, sorry, Dom.
Please go ahead.
Oh, the Ioniq 6N was seen on the Nürburgring this week, but the body was, they'd stuck on some kind of fender extenders on the side, because they probably had to drive it to the track, and there are regs over the wheels and the rubber not extending past the body. So they'd stuck those on, but otherwise they were testing the Ioniq 6N with otherwise stock body on the outside. But I think, what do you think? I think it's a pretty fair shout that if they're giving the N team the Ioniq 6, that they're going to do the same thing with that. It's going to be bigger, wider, longer, re-engineered.
Yeah, I can't imagine they're not going to go as hardcore, as they did. It's going to be the same.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah? You think it's going to be that hardcore? Because this thing looks like, we're looking at it on the screen here. If you're watching us on YouTube, you can see it, or Twitch.
Well, this is the race car, the EN1. It's going to be a single-make series that Hyundai are going to go racing with. And somebody in my comments this week said, oh, EVs are so rubbish that the only way that they're going to win is that they have to put all the same cars in the same race. And I thought, right. I didn't respond, but I thought to myself, tell me you don't know motorsports without telling me you don't know motorsports. So, oh, wow, a single make series. That's really interesting. Yeah, that's right. Because EVs are terrible. But this is, I don't even know if there's a calendar for this year, but it looks cool. So,
right.
Yep. Yeah. So my day yesterday, I can review my day at the track, which is a good day. Really good day. Jordan went to go see a new concept BMW for Out of Spec, which is the least appealing thing possible to me.
And you went to a track.
Yeah, and I was like, I'm going to the racetrack. See you later.
Noe Class X, I believe you saw at the Peterson Museum.
And that video goes up in 10 minutes, so we'll learn about that car. We should probably talk about the Noe Class X, I think is how you say it.
Yeah,
That car comes out before the Rivian R2. That's end of next year.
Yeah, I mean, we don't have a whole lot of information about it, really, except that it's
Jordan
all
had
new,
a bunch of info.
And it'll look slightly different than the, it'll look more different from the concept than the R2 will look from its concept, basically.
No, I don't think so.
According
to Jordan, a lot of it is going to look very similar to what we were showing, and they like, this passes crash, this passes blah, 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 and it's like 4690 cells.
Right.
So like really hardcore next gen, ground up EV platform.
Right. I mean, yeah, 4690 sales haven't impressed me yet, but we'll see how they do
well,
there.
It depends. BMW have got five suppliers, and we now know one of them is going to be right. Rematz in Croatia. So well, let's wait and see what the chemistry does.
Right. But I did see, I don't know if you have a picture of that Neue Klasse up here real quick there, Martin.
Yeah, I'll find it.
Oh, yeah. But speaking of Jordan, though, he does have another out-of-spec video out this week with the Porsche Taycan GT at the track in Sevilla, I believe he was at, Seville, Spain. So, yeah, that's up there if you're curious about the Porsche Taycan.
It was one of the worst performing videos of the year for the coolest car.
Right. Yeah, it is.
No one cared.
And I think Jordan did a great job with it, too, I thought.
Yeah, that was a nice video. I learned a lot. They have Turbo GT and Turbo GT with Vysok pack, and like the Vysok pack is the lightweighting package. They like remove the power charge ports. They even remove a whole charge port from the driver's side of the vehicle, leaves you with one. They take the back seats out and they go just, you know, dial it up to 11 in terms of hardcoreness. And I'm like, electric performance. This is amazing. And like two people cared, which I knew no one was going to care about it, because how big is the market for a $250,000 electric sports supercar? Right. Very little, but
so this Neue Klasse, if you look, if it'll stop, the video will freeze on the shot.
Sorry.
Do the A-pillars look like kind of smaller than normal to you? Like, that's what I was looking at last night. So I was thinking like some of those things look still kind of concept-y, but
I'm not here to defend concept vehicles because I think they're dumb.
Right.
But I will say a lot of what we're looking at that we think is concept, Jordan told me is not actually concept.
Okay. That's good. That's pretty
I think that what Dom's saying does bring up a point. If something is going to be changed, it's going to be the A pillars and stuff, because that they always slim them down for concepts. I actually was in a focus group to see the BMW iX about 4 years before we saw it. This was like 2016 or something like that. And it looked almost exactly the way the production version ended up being, except it did have those like 2-inch A pillars, you know, and you look at them, you're like, this can't make production, but who knows? Maybe they have new high density steel or whatever, but high strength steel, but they always slim down the pillars for that. But everything else, I think a lot of that you see in that video looks like it could very well be production.
That'd be pretty cool then. That's like in the 60s and 70s, we had the like small A pillars and stuff, but you know, they're not really great in crashes. So yeah.
I was reading, it was either Car or Evo or Top Gear, and they had an interview three or four weeks ago with the engineers, or maybe the lead engineer of the Neue Klasse X. And they were saying, well, it's a concept and you've called it this, and we're learning about the cells and the, you know, all these improvements and how much of this is concept-y. And I think they said, just call this the iX3. So forget all the concept stuff and calling it the Neue Klasse X concept.
Okay.
Call this the new BMW iX3, and it makes a lot more sense in your brain. And this is what this is the new iX3, or this is the electric version of the X3, a massive seller, and one of the most important vehicles to BMW. They're not going to muck around with this. This is going to be brilliant.
Yeah, I kind of like it. You know, I got to say, these last few go rounds with this design, I think it's really coming together nicely. Looks good. Let's see what it looks like in the flesh, and it'll be, I guess, a bit smaller than the iX. Yeah. All right.
Yeah, I would think so. iX isn't also like X5 size, so probably just a tiny bit smaller than iX. But I think it's kind of cool. I don't know.
Yeah, then we'll have
huge improvement up front.
Yeah,
front end is so much nicer. I love like those that. Vertical, kidney grills.
Yeah, I like the iX big honk and nozzle.
Depends on the color.
I'm the only one though.
There's some colors that I think it looks horrible, but then there's some that I look at and I'm like, that's not bad. I guess if it's a darker color and it blends right in. Somebody that lives near me owns a black one, and that just like you don't see it, you don't see that outline as much. Some colors it just, to me, it just looks so bad.
Yeah, this finally is like a good looking BMW, I think, and it's hopefully got the tech to back it up.
I like the iX in the red and with a bronze accent.
red and bronze. Are you smoking something?
I love the blue interior.
Oh my god!
I like what I like. I don't know.
It's crazy. You got to get an IX black just so you can't see any of the details, and then it looks good.
I like the details, but yeah. So hey, Kyle, last week on during our show, you were road tripping to Normal, Illinois to visit Rivian. They were having a special event, and you got to check out the 2026 R2 in person, as well as the R3 and R3X. And you even got to talk to the CEO, RJ Scringe, for a bit, and he set you up with a Rivian service van for a day. So I definitely want to get your impressions about the delivery van, which you could actually drive. But first, I just want to know what you thought about the R2 after seeing it in person, and did you learn anything about it that people have overlooked? I saw in your video that you got to sit in and play with the interface a bit, and yeah. So, like, what do you think of the car and like the interface, like with the revised scroll wheels? I thought that was pretty cool. So,
yeah, overall, R2 is Rivian's sort of midsize electric vehicle SUV that's going to be coming. So, actually, almost a direct competitor to this, this iX3 that we're talking about here, the Neue Klasse X. So, it's kind of cool. This week has been a week of extreme performance electric cars, and then hopefully Model 3 performance is launching soon. And then we've also had like mom cars. So it's just been a lot of different types of vehicles, which is good. I like the variety.
Are you calling the R2 a mom car?
Absolutely. It is a mom car. Okay. It's a cool mom car. I mean, it's also, it's a lot of people car. It's like kind of a car that everyone can find something that appeals to them with. Right. And, with R2, what's crazy to me is it's actually farther away than the BMW launching. So the R2 is purely a design concept at the moment. But their design concept is we want the production version to match as close as possible to this. Now, we remember when Rivian showed the R1, there were little changes as we came to production. Charge port move, lights had some things. That probably will happen with R2 as well, where we'll see some massaging bits. But overall, the base structure of the vehicle is probably not going to deviate much from what was presented when I got a chance to film it. So I've been a little bit against over the years filming things ahead of production, but I was like, I kind of want to see R2. Everyone keeps talking about it. So it was not really planned. I woke up one morning and I said, Alyssa and I drove with Blue, our dog, to Normal, Illinois. And I said, okay, we're just going. So we jumped in the Model S. We hit 1,000 miles throughout the day. And in Normal, they had this little event that we got invited to because we own a Rivian. But it was also a community event. I think anyone really could have gone. And I went there and there was an R2. And I was like, great. And I know some Rivian people. I'm like, do you mind if I make a film with the car? They're like, oh, go ahead. Show up 20 minutes early. And, we'll like get you in, let you sit in the car, play around with the stuff, nice. Which very few people got to sit in the car. So I was extremely lucky about that. And that's basically what we did. We filmed a tour of it and it looks great from the outside. It's got the right size. It's got the interior design is amazing. The materials are really nice in that car as well. The big question is what spec were we seeing? Because again, they say it starts at 45,000, but I don't think the one we were seeing was 45,000. And so, that's, we were probably seeing a top spec idea of what the car should be. The software was really not fully baked in that car. They had a couple demos and some visuals as to what they wanted it to look like, but the actual user interface wasn't totally working.
Right. But there was enough there that you could play with the, at the wheel and go through some of the menus and use like the new scroll wheels on the wheel.
Right. The new scroll wheels on the wheel are amazing. It's a totally new way to interact with a vehicle, I would say. It's basically got these two giant Apple Watch digital crowns baked into the wheel. And they're so high quality in the way that they feel. And you can pull them, you can push them, you can push them side to side, and you can totally adjust, basically anything, I would imagine, from them. So really impressive. The R2 infotainment interaction points. Mm-hmm. We'll have to see what they're like when they enter production, but if they're even half as good as to what I experienced, then it would be amazing.
Kyle, you know what I like about it? I got a chance to play with it in New York, and I actually shot a video. I just haven't had time to edit it. those scroll wheels go through the steering wheel. So you can feel them from the backside of the steering wheel. So if your hands wrapped around the steering wheel, you could scroll them underneath the wheel. I thought that was really cool that, you know, you don't have to use your thumb. You could use your other fingers on the other side of the wheel. So really good, thoughtful engineering by Rivian.
They pop forward too from the back too, don't they? You can push in from the front, but also pop forwards from the back. Is that how that works?
Yep. It was really cool.
Yeah. It's cool. Really quickly, you also heard that they might move the charge port on that, because right now it's on the passenger side in the back, this weird-looking little rectangular shape.
Well, that flap's going to change regardless. We know that it's not going to be like that for production.
Right. It is a weird kind of flap. So any hints for that? Because, personally, I think it should be on the front passenger side somehow, like ahead of the...
I don't think we're going to see it on the front.
Okay. Interesting.
I think it's going to be back left or back right, and they haven't locked in that decision. Where they have it now, I think, is the best cost. And also, they say support street-side charging, which just isn't a big deal in the U.S. And most street-side charging has enough cable length to reach the other side of the vehicle. I've street-side charged a bunch, actually, just at, filming videos with Flow and stuff. And it's never been an issue in a Tesla with a with a charge port on the other side of the car. The charge port thing, I think, maybe is getting a little bit blown out of proportion, because Rivian believes that Tesla will update the version 3 superchargers, a lot of them, with version 4 posts. And so we will have long cables, and that means charge port doesn't really matter.
Right.
My preference is to have it on the driver's side. I really like getting out of the car and just plugging it in, not having to walk around it every single time. Sure. So just like getting out, plug the car in, go wherever I need to go. A charge port does not weigh into my buying decision much at all. I can deal with any charge port location on a vehicle. I would just prefer it to be near a corner so that if I am in a back-in situation or a pull-in situation, I don't have to stretch any cables too far forwards. Like F-150 Lightning, Audi e-tron, too far into the middle of the car for me. I really want them on one of the four corners.
What about on the very back, like in the center behind, like a cap or something like the old days, or behind the license plate? That was the best.
Yeah, I don't know how I would feel about that idea. It just gets so dirty and dusty and crappy on the back of a car.
It does.
Well, if you're Dom, you remember when Mercedes had like 5 different plug-in hybrid models like 6 or 7 years ago, they were all on the rear bumper.
Oh, really?
They weren't in the center, though. They were on the right side, but they were all back there. And I used to grill them on that every time a new one came out. Like, why are you putting it here? You understand the corner of the bumper is like the number one place where people have like bang things. You know, when they're backing up, boom, those corners get pushed in all the time. You're going to render the car unusable. And they said, well, we've done focus groups, and this is where our customers want it. When they pull straight in their garage, they want to just be able to. I'm like, so they're going to get out of their car on the driver's side, walk around to the back, and their charger is going to be in the back of the garage, like out by the entrance, and that's where they're going to plug it in? I don't think so. And they're like, oh, yes, we've done a lot of market research. I'm like, well, that's going to change over the years. Right. So, but that's, that's what you get when you do focus groups. People don't know what they don't know. They're asking people that never owned an EV, where would you want your charge port?
True. That is a good point. All right. So as I mentioned to Kyle, you got to also drive the Rivian 3CV or ECV 500, the electric commercial van, service vehicle. So, as I mentioned, you also, so you made a video and took viewers all around the outside and inside, and of course you went for a drive and also charged it. I think they gave this to you for the whole day, right? So if some folks are interested, they should definitely go check this video out. It's a good one, especially if you're a lover of cool commercial vehicles. So you drove it for a while and checked out the build quality, acceleration, then you charged it up. I don't know if you charged it up full or whatever, but you did a 70 miles an hour range test. So first of all, how did you like its driving dynamics? I noticed at one point it was warning you to slow down around a turn. I don't think it cut the power to prevent you from taking the turn a little fast, but I guess your overall impressions of the thing.
Yeah, well, I think in a van like this, unfortunately, driving dynamics plays the smallest role in the purchase decision, but
right.
not for Kyle Connor. So that's right. what I care about. And it was fun. And it's really, anytime you drive a big vehicle that is surprisingly torquey and surprisingly high quality, I get excited. I'm like, this is cool. And it was one of the most fun days that I've had in an EV. It was really cool. Yeah, I did charge it 0 to 100. I drained it 100 to 0 in a range test, drove it all around normal, took everyone on a tour, pretended to be an Amazon driver getting in and out of it, or a service, technician getting in and out of it. It was really fun. And overall, yeah, it just happened totally last minute. I was super lucky to have the opportunity to test this thing. First time we've ever tested the Rivian LFP battery pack. And so that was pretty cool to look at its performance and log how it does compared to the other batteries. And really enjoyed van life for the day there. The only reason I gave it back was just because we had to go home. Otherwise, I'm sure I could have kept it even longer. It was really great.
Right. I like the little, what are those things? I mean, every car should have this little unlock thing. How do they work on the Rivian van? So when the driver is approaching it, the fan is locked as he walks away, right? And so as he approaches it, it unlocks. And you showed us a little button that the drivers carry that makes that happen. But it seems like a lot more reliable than our phones.
Yeah, so it's much more reliable than phone key and even the Rivian R1 key. My guess is these go through batteries faster because they're constantly on communicating, I would think. And what's cool is it only opens the door that the driver's standing in front of. And by open, I mean unlocks. So if you're around back, no one can get in the front doors. And so it's really cool how it just dynamically locks and unlocks each door based off of key. And that's a setting, I'm sure, but it worked really well for us.
Right. Speaking of unlocking automatic doors, there is one automatic door in there. When you get in to go anywhere and put it in drive, the little door between the driver compartment and the rear storage space closes, and then it opens up again automatically when you put it in park?
Yep, exactly.
Oh, that's awesome. And can you also slide it manually?
You can.
Okay. I mean, those doors are like can be a big pain sometimes, and depending on the upfitter and how well it's installed. So I thought that was a really kind of a great thing, because when you're working a vehicle like this, you're always stop and you're going back. So that's one thing that you don't have to worry about. You know, that door is going to be open for you, and you just pop back and then.
And the door is so fast. It's like wham, open, wham, close. And Blue was standing in between the door and the aisle, and it chopped him a couple times. And he was like, "What is going on?"
Blue loved this thing. You had Alyssa with you and Blue. And I don't know what Alyssa thought of it, but Blue seemed to really enjoy it. I don't know.
Yeah, he loved it. He loves big vehicles and vans and stuff. So he really had a good time running around this thing.
And there he is right there. So the Rivian RCV has a 135 kilowatt hour LFP pack. So what kind of range do you think you would get at 70 miles an hour?
We don't even have to think. We know now. So okay. we did a 70 mile per hour range test. But keep in mind, before we tell the number, this is a van that's designed for primarily city use at the moment. This is a delivery application that they're, of course, porting over to service vehicles, to some other companies buying them as well. But this is the smallest battery Rivian offers. So it's only 90 kilowatt hour usable or so, which for a big vehicle is not much. So it did 100 and almost 120 miles. I can't remember exactly, but 116 or something like that.
Okay. So I think its official range is like 161 miles, but they expect these vehicles to be going, 35 miles an hour, basically, not 70,
In the city, this is a 200-mile van that you can drive all day and probably some more. But think about how high it is. You have to push all that air out of the way at speed. You're just sitting hard throttle. And so, yeah.
Oh, there's one other thing. Oh, yeah. So your DC fast charge, it only charges at 20, 22 kilowatts?
No, it does 54 peak.
Okay. Okay, yeah. I thought during the video you were charging at 22 though, right? For
some that point. Was on the when the battery was cold, and then we went and did the proper test after that.
So what did it max out at?
54 kilowatts. It's just like a giant bolt. Just sits at 50 kilowatts, and then as soon as you hit 80%, it dips down to 35 kilowatts or so, and then just holds that to 100. Now in the specs, Rivian says 100 kilowatt capable. but ours was not capable of that. And so it says 50 kilowatt DC fast charging, 100 kilowatt capable. That might be like a paid upgrade.
Okay.
We've seen a couple like van companies do that. Like Mercedes makes you charge more for higher DC charging. And it might just be against the warranty use of the vehicle. I'm not sure why they would do that. But this one was equipped with the 50 kilowatt charging package.
Okay.
And you can see that's what it's doing right there.
Right. So one last thing for me. I don't know if anybody else has any questions for you, but the BrightDrop or Rivian RCV?
Yeah, good question. BrightDrop, Rivian RCV, e-Transit or e-Sprinter? And I think the if you need the range, the e-Sprinter is the fastest charging and longest range option, which Tom's had a chance to check out. I've not had a chance to really get my hands on that yet, but that's cool. That has a much bigger battery. It's much slimmer and it's just awesome. And trying to think, I guess the like Rivian van is the one that pulls my heartstrings the most.
Okay.
Because it's a great design. It's a great drive. It is the highest quality van experience you can have because it's all Rivian stuff in there. So, you know, R1T and R1S, they're not cheap cars and it feels like driving one of those just enlarged. So you get a really nice steering system, really nice switch gear, nice wheels, good throttle control, you know, great screens that are extremely responsive to what you need to do, and cool applications that you can integrate it with other, you know, like other functions like the Amazon built-in app here.
Right. And it's front-wheel drive, I guess, to keep the load floor, you know, low in the back, right?
Yeah, and I don't know if they made a few all-wheel drives or they will. I do know that was originally part of the plans, but talking to some people at the event, most of them were not on the van side, so a lot of them just don't know what's going on with this project, but a lot of them were like confused when I asked about all-wheel drive.
I got a chance to sit in one back when they first came out when I saw them here on the roads in New Jersey. I made a little YouTube short at the time. And I echo what Kyle said about when you sit in it, it's like you're in a luxury vehicle, not a delivery van. I mean, not that much, but, you know, I felt very much like I was in my R1T. I had the R1T at the time. It was before I had the R1S. And the steering wheel is different, but like the controls and the screens are the same, even like the fonts and everything. So it felt very much like my R1T, which is, you know, surprising. I wouldn't say surprising, but which is cool if this is your job to drive this, you're driving a nice, cool vehicle every day, which you wouldn't think that would be part of, you know, being a delivery person, but, you know, and you were talking, Dom, a little bit before about the DC fast charge speed of it, only 50 something kilowatts. I'm going to echo what I've said here on the podcast so many times. It does not matter for these vehicles. They're not going to be DC fast charged. 50 kilowatts is all you need. And that would be like in a pinch. They have set routes and everything, and the downtime while they're being loaded and so forth, you know, even 50 kilowatts, if they were going to put, let's say, DC fast chargers at depots, would be more than enough to get them back on the road. And as Kyle said, in urban environments, you could drive this thing all day and come back with half a battery. You know, these aren't, for the most part, meant to do what Kyle did and drive 70 miles an hour till it runs out. These are just, you know, load them up, you know, do your route, come back to the shop, maybe get reloaded and go back out, but have it charging while that's happening. So I thought it was really cool when I got a chance to sit in it.
Right. Hey, so Rivian has shut down its normal Illinois factory for the month of April to make changes to the production line, but it still has vehicles left to sell. And so, Kyle, I understand they have a special incentive for people buying R1T and R1S right now, like a free paint protection film vehicle wrap worth about $5,000. Any special details people should know about that, like where it's like where it's being done, and do you know how many vehicles are trying to move?
I don't know the exact details on numbers, but we did an Out of Spec podcast on this, and so essentially, when I was at the factory, by the way, there were thousands of vehicles, like a scary amount. Not that I'm a good factory analyst or like know what the heck I'm talking about, but there was like, it seemed to me, hundreds, maybe 1,000 Amazon vans, all pre-wrapped Amazon everywhere. Okay. Like they got to come pick those things up. What are they doing? That was my impression. I'm like, why are they still here? They're made. Go use them. And then there are parking lots full of R1T and R1S beyond the factory. They're parking them at the State Farm headquarters.
Okay.
And so they're like filling up other parking lots in the area, which is crazy. There's so many of them. Right. So then these are all pre-refresh models that are, you know, they have to sell ahead of the refresh, which is coming in less than a month from now. Right. So just weeks away. So how do you incentivize an old car? Essentially, they built so many of these old ones and, you know, they got the new one coming. So they're at least in inventory having a really aggressive lease, especially on R1T is my understanding. So you can go and get a really good lease, and they will even for free stealth wrap your vehicle, which is typically a $5,000 charge from Rivian, but $7,000 to $10,000 in the aftermarket if you were to go do it. So that is a cool incentive for sure to get that stealth protection XPEL wrap. I've never seen a car company do something like this before. Such a large aftermarket upgrade provided by them at no charge. Pretty cool.
Yeah. All right. So let's move on. I guess anyone have any other Rivian questions?
Oh, all I would say for anyone watching, if they heard us talk about the shutdown, what that is a significant period of the factory being closed, but in order to make very significant upgrades to how they make the vehicles themselves, vastly reducing the human input and the time it takes to make a vehicle, lowering the costs of making the vehicle, because that helps Rivian get into the black and make a profit on every vehicle they're selling, which they're not. And it's a really, really big deal for the company. So yeah, the vehicles get better at the end of the day afterwards as well. But if you're wondering what the shutdown is, 28th of April or the 30th of April are the two dates I've seen banded around of when it reopens. Doesn't really matter. It's a long closure, but it's a significant upgrade to the efficiency is of how they build their vehicles.
Right. All right. And so Tom, this week you published a video about visiting the Gravity Charging Center in Manhattan and talking further with its founder, Moshe Cohen. We, of course, interviewed Moshe on this channel here as well. So we don't need to spend a whole lot of time on this today, but I was just wondering if there was anything about that visit that you wanted to share. I understand that you got to check out the new curbside chargers as well.
Yeah, you know, honestly, I didn't really do much more than our interview. I just wanted to get something up quick. I had a very short period of time. I had like 20 minutes in New York City. Mm-hmm. It was during the auto show, and I ran over there. I wanted to charge and check it out, and he was kind enough to step in front of the camera with me and do a quick interview. But when we were done, I asked him further about the power sharing capability and how he's able to, you know, do what he says there without having any infrastructure upgrades. And we didn't really get a good solid answer on that. So I talked to him and his people and said, look, I need to sit down with you and really ask you how you're doing this. And you need to have technical answers. And they agreed to do that. So I'm going to set up an interview with him soon. And, you know, if anybody has any other questions on that, you know, leave them in the comment section. But I'm going to really drill down on his software and his ability to install these in all over the city and other cities. I mean, he has plans to, you know, go nationwide with this and install these all over the place, and says he's very rarely going to ever need any utility upgrades unless he's like out in the middle of nowhere where there just is no power, which is kind of, you know, goes against what most people in the industry tell me, even right. People that work in the power sharing and load sharing business that have load sharing systems, because he's not the first person to come out with, like, you know, load sharing systems for big public sure. garages and so forth. There's other companies that make them, but even they say there's limits. You know, he's just kind of like, yeah, no, we take the excess capacity for the whole block, and it's never going to throttle down power. We could have all 24 units delivering 500 kilowatts. And I mean, it kind of seems like pie in the sky to me. So, I wanted to check the place out. I wanted to plug my car in. I wanted to walk around. I wanted to see if there were other vehicles there. And there were. The place was packed. There were Teslas. There were the ride sharing systems. The whole time I was there, there was very few times I was waiting to get nobody there so I could do some camera shots. But it was rare that I was able to get a good shot of it. And I wanted to check out his cable management system, this thing on the ceiling.
I think.
Cool. And that's I noticed cool. that he has two different models of these Gravity 500 kilowatt units. So I asked him about that and he was like, yeah, good catch. You know, we're playing with, there's two slightly different designs. They have different cooling and we're getting them out there. We're seeing which one performs better. And then that's the one we're going to eventually use. And he even said he's already finding some issues with the overhead cable management. He's like, this is version one. I'm going to, we already identified a couple of points that we're going to improve upon. Mm-hmm. You know, for inner city garages, you could see in the background there, you know, there's nothing like that available currently where that takes up no footprint in these urban areas where you just don't have any space to spare. And, right. you know, which, so in that regards, I like what they're doing. We still have to learn a lot about the company, but
yeah.
Just having another player out there saying, you know, we're gonna invest a lot of money in EV charging and hopefully improve, that's, to me, is a win. Will Gravity be some big charging network in 4 or 5 years and have stations all over the country? At this point, I really don't know, but it's good that somebody else has thrown their hat in the ring as far as I'm concerned.
Right. So, Tom, also, you put out a video this week that we've all been waiting for. So you got the official NACS to CCS adapter, and you put it through the state of charge torture test that you've already subjected two of the unofficial adapters to. So how did it hold up?
Okay, so, yeah, if you're familiar with what we've been doing, back on the day that Ford opened up the network, Kyle and I both got one of these. We're one of the few people that got one of these. Liv and Patrick got one too. Liv's, I think, in the comment section here. It's funny. There's three people out of like how many that got them, you know, are here. I guess because we're just right. all nerds. But the one Ford gave us was a pre-production, and they said, please, when we have the production version out, we're going to ask you to ship it back to us. We're going to send you this one, and we're going to ask you to send that one back to us because they didn't tell us why. And to be honest with you, Ford might not even know exactly why. But Tesla, I assume, told them, please don't, you know, that's not the final model. So, I think Kyle had to take off. So, say bye to him. But so they sent the first batch of the production ones out last, I think it was Friday, and I got it the next day. So I've been waiting to do my review on this. I didn't want to review the pre-production because it's a pre-production. Maybe there was something on it that didn't perform the way it was supposed to. We don't know what made it pre-production. I can't tell the difference. I had thought it was going to be because the ones we had, and it's funny, I talk about it in the video. I can't believe I'm talking about Tesla panel gaps. But the one that I have, actually, the panel gaps are not even. Like, you can see in the chart, there's daylight in there on all the surfaces around this, the edge here. So I thought, well, maybe they didn't seal the pre-production one and they don't want people out there. So then I got the production one and I looked at it. It's the same thing. So now I'm understanding that it is... That's definitely an outer casing. There's an inner casing inside this that is okay. like the waterproof rating and everything for sure, because water will get in this adapter here. This is just kind of like this outer casing isn't what protects any of the electronics. I did my same test that I did with the other two adapters, the A to Z and the Electron adapter. I charged my Lightning from 10 to 80% on the same supercharger that I've done the other two. I measured the temperature. You know, all three adapters really performed very well. I did, if you're watching on YouTube, you see now I did my key features where I go over, you know, amps, volts, and all the key features of the adapter. I do this with my chargers. Unfortunately, I couldn't get all of the information on this. Ford didn't have it. Tesla doesn't respond when you email them. And things like where it was made, I'm assuming it's made in the U.S. You know, the weatherproof rating, is it a NEMA 4 rated device? Is it IP67? That stuff, none of it came in the box. The other two companies, I could ask Electron and A to Z and give me all your specs. And of course, they'll give it to me as soon as I ask. But with Tesla, it's a little different. So if you're watching on YouTube now, you'll see on the bottom, I say assumed made in the U.S., operating temperature unknown, enclosure unknown. I had all that information with the other adapters, but performed similarly. I'm going to do it now. I'm going to do a quick recap video of all three side by side, and I'm going to list the things I like about each one, because quite honestly, there's things I like about each one and things I don't like about each one. And the problem with this one is you can't get it now. The only way to get it is if you're a Ford customer or a Rivian customer, and you've registered for it very early, because both of them are going to be very hard. Tesla's just not making enough of them to supply Ford and Rivian, so you're going to be waiting a long time. The other two adapters you can buy. Lectron is a little bit behind with their shipping. They only just started shipping them, I think. A to Z's been shipping them. A to Z has sold, I think, like 10,000 of them so far.
Wow.
Yeah,
no, they're really ambitious. Yeah, they to see
from my video alone, they told me they sold over 1,000 of them like the 2 days after my video went live. So, so you can get one. It's unauthorized, the A to Z and the Lectron. But as far as I can tell so far, there is no disadvantage of using that over the official Tesla one. Both companies I talked to at great length, and they both talked about how they designed them and built them to the UL 2252 standard, and that they expect to have UL certification as soon as you can get UL certified. This adapter that Tesla's making isn't UL certified. It's not safety certified. No adapters are. But Tesla owns the network, and Tesla can say, we don't want you using anything on the network except the adapters that we sell or other OEMs sell. But I will say, I know for a fact that the other companies like A to Z and Lectron have been in discussion with other OEMs to be like considered, I won't say an official adapter, but for the company to say, you can use this adapter also. But none of that's going to happen until UL certification comes out. So, for a while, if you have a non-Tesla that's authorized to charge on the network, and you're far back in the queue to get your official adapter, in my opinion, the A to Z and the Lectron is a decent option. I don't see, there's nothing on them that so far that I could see that would make them seem unsafe, but I haven't opened them up. They don't get that hot. All three of them are way below the UL 2252 surface temperature numbers, which I have that document on how hot they're allowed to get surface temperature. None of them get, within 20 or 30 degrees of that. Now, it has been cooler out here. It's not in the middle of the summer. Right. Both companies, I spoke to Lectron and A to Z about this and said, what happens in Arizona when it's 110 degrees out and you're charging? And both companies have said, we've tested these in the labs where we've dialed them up to as hot as it could possibly get outside and let them run for, hours. And none of them will reach the UL2252's surface temperature, limit. But I will note the A to Z did get a little bit hotter than both of these other two adapters. And I talked to A to Z about it, and their answer was, that's good. That's what we want. And I'm like, really? They're like, yeah. They're like, if you open it up, you'll see the inside of our adapter has more insulation than any of the other adapters. And it's designed to allow the heat to escape. You don't want to keep the heat inside. You want the heat to get out of the adapter, and we've designed it to pass through the surface, and it just needs to remain under what, we consider and what UL considers a safe limit. So take it for what you want. And I will say that coming up next, I will be doing, I don't have a date on it yet, but I will be getting the supercharger extension cables.
Oh,
and I will be doing a video on those.
That's sooner than
I thought I would be doing. So
okay,
we'll be. I think that's going to be interesting.
It sounds like there's something you're not telling us, but it's great. When you first mentioned supercharger extension cords like a little while ago, I was like, how is that even possible? Because that's really kind of a no-no. And historically with electric vehicles, you don't really want to use extension cords when you plug them in.
Yeah.
Or if you do, you got to make sure they're like nice and thick, a really heavy gauge. So, it was very interesting to hear that they're considering something like that for superchargers, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. So, but the problem is with these, the non-Tesla vehicles, the charge ports weren't designed for Tesla stalls. So, you know, we're taking up two stalls, and in case of like my Lightning, I could barely reach. I mean, I have to, if you look at the video I did with the adapter, I have to touch my bumper to the bollard, you know, to just to be able to just get the cord to reach. So, I mean, it's not true with the Rivian. The Rivian, the charge port's close to our front. Kyle mentioned before how he likes to, his charge port's close to the ends of the vehicle, and that makes sense. It's easier to plug. But you see the Lightning, look how far back it is. It's like 4 feet from the back of the mega power frunk. I mean, you know, it's got this huge frunk, but that pushed the charge port way back to where the driver's door is. So, yeah, no, you know, they won't be liquid cooled.
Right.
Which, you know, some people talk about, you know, that's an issue. But when you think about it, the cabling inside the vehicle from the charge port to the, you know, battery management or to the battery, that's not liquid cooled.
True.
So, it, you know, but and it, we'll see how short it is. I don't think they'll be 500 amp.
Okay.
I don't think without any kind of liquid cooling they would be allowed to pass 500. So I think we're going to look at, and I don't have any facts on this yet, I think we're going to look at like 300-350 amp. You know, we'll see. But I know Tesla's making one, and A to Z is making one for sure. Electron, I'm pretty sure has one in development. So I think we're going to get some cables on the market, you know, within the next couple of months.
These will probably have like the adapters integrated into the cable then.
Yeah, I would think they would, but I haven't seen them yet.
Okay. That's going to be interesting.
This week we heard the news of the 200 stall supercharger going in just off exit 193 of the Florida Turnpike at Yeehaw Junction. It's 160 of the prefabricated supercharger units and then 40 more standalone stalls or, well, just not the prefab ones, and some pull-throughs as well, but they're V3s. So, I made the assumption that every big, new, serious Tesla installation would be at least V4 dispensers from now onwards, and they don't seem to be going in. This is, you know, 200 stalls, so an extension cable would make sense, but if anyone's going to test it with safety as, you know, number one priority, it's going to be Tom. So we'll wait and see. I mean, it'll be safe if Tesla approve it, so we can't wait to see. But yeah, I just thought that V4s, as they're selling V4 dispensers to third parties now, we've got two sites here with Tesla V4 dispensers, not branded Tesla, obviously, and yet they're putting their own V3s in the ground, still a big size. So the cable will be needed.
So Mark just posted a, and thank you for the $5.
Thank you, Mark.
Tom, would you suggest to A to Z that they combine Naxxis adapter with the extension cable? Needing a cable and an adapter is two fail points. So, Mark, you know, there's some smart people at these companies, and I think they're looking into all the options that they can, and you know, they would certainly love to sell the cable extension with the adapter on the end. I think that makes sense. You know, why just sell the cable? You know, so I don't know if there's any technical reasons why they don't, but I know that this is something they've been talking about for a long time there. This isn't just the last couple of months, and they've had a lot of engineering going into what they've been putting out so far. And I think soon you'll see what they've been working on.
So Martin, Jared's asking, oops, that's not Jared. Here we go. Is that really Yeehaw Junction? If so, I want to see this. So 200 stall Tesla supercharger. I think I should make plans to go and visit that when it's opened up and share that experience with you all. But is it, how do you spell that junction?
Yeehaw Junction. Y-E-E-H-A-W.
Okay. I've never heard of the Yeehaw Junction.
Exit 193 of the Florida Turnpike.
Okay. Is that close to Orlando or close to Miami or something?
Let's find out.
Okay. And it's not that important, I guess.
No, it's interesting to see where it's going to be. So,
you're looking at that.
200 stalls, they're not mucking around, are they?
No, that's huge. And I assume that's going to have big solar canopies and all that kind of stuff too, right?
I've seen the layout of it. Just to have a look at the prefab
Bill Walker saying closer to Miami, he believes.
The prefab units. So it's there. The pin I've dropped is there, south of Orlando. And then can we zoom in?
That's a good spot then. It's catching a lot of traffic coming up the coast from, you know, all those places south of there, Fort Lauderdale, Miami. The whole coast is populated pretty thick, headed towards Orlando, but a little away from the coast. Interesting.
There we go. We'll zoom out again and a bit of perspective on a bit too far.
That's a good road trip for me, I think. Actually, that's a nice one.
There's Tallahassee up here, so yeah, it's going to be a nice road trip.
Yeah, it's five and a half hours. I'm thinking we're looking at there.
Nice.
All right. So I should mention this week, Out of Spec put a ribbon on its Ocean to Ocean electric truck race, and somebody in their comments got their T-shirt already. They have Out of Spec made these Ocean to Ocean, you know, memorial. They're not really memorials. T-shirts. No one died.
Commemorative.
That's the word I want. Thank you, sir. English language is, you know, it's tough for me sometimes. Like, I grew up speaking English. Oh, wait a sec. Anyway, they put the grand finale of the Ocean Ocean truck race went up on Saturday. It's hours long, but it's great. And as well, on the Out of Spec podcast, there's interviews with all the teams. And I was fortunate enough to participate in that whole thing. So besides taking some official video and doing some driving, I also put together my own video of the race from my perspective. And that is up on the Drive Electric with Dominic YouTube channel. If anyone's, you know, hadn't had enough of, I think Out of Spec's coverage probably covers like, I don't know, 6 hours, 8 hours, you know, probably like 8 hours or more. I don't know. There's a lot of video watching, but it's a long distance, 4 different teams, a lot's going on. So anyway, that's all that's up there now. Also this week I put my, my car was updated with the FSD supervised 12.3.3 FSD. So I put it through my test loop here in Tallahassee. Which I call it the Do Loop, Drive Electric with Dominic Loop. And I have to say that it's doing very, very well. Like, it's not perfect yet or anything. I saw some clips of it yesterday, like supposedly blasting past the stop sign. So we're not talking about prime time here yet. But, you know, I'm going to make a video about things that still doesn't do properly. But, man, it's improved so much. It's kind of unbelievable. I'm using it on the occasional drive when I'm not testing, and I never would do that before. It was just too much, required too much supervision for my, you know, for my taste. So I played a show last Saturday in Sop Choppy, Florida. That's like 45 minutes out of town, and it took me the whole way there, 45 minute drive and back. I had to disengage like one time on the way down for navigation. It wanted to take me like probably the short way, but because of the traffic and stuff, you know, I wanted to go a different way, so I just had to do that. But other than that, you know, it was just like country roads, not city streets, so maybe it's a low bar for it. But I don't know if anyone, Tom, you haven't had a chance to try out the V12 yet, right?
No, I haven't. I actually have the opportunity to. Honestly, I don't really have much interest in doing it. I'm kind of over it, you know, sure. And give it to me when it's done.
Okay.
I really don't care about these incremental improvements at this point. Right. You know, I've driven it many times on many different improvements, and it's like, okay, yeah, it's a little better, or this actually went backwards. I think it's worse than before.
Right.
I'm over it. It's like, you know, give it to me and I'll pay for it when I can get in it and just say, you know, take me to my in-laws and then just go to sleep. I don't care anything between now and then. Sorry if I'm like bitter, but like, it's like, I'm over this FSD stuff.
And then it will be worth $12,000 or $10,000. Like that, if you can get in and say, take me here, now I'm going to edit a video or, you know, read a book, then it's worth 10 grand. Absolutely.
And I'm not saying, I know it's hard as hell. I'm not trying to minimize how difficult this is. It's brutally expensive to do it. I'm certain harder than what Elon and what the Tesla engineers thought at first. I don't think that they were intentionally lying back, you know, 5 years ago or 6 years ago when he said we're a year away from, you know, coast to coast driving where the driver can go to sleep or whatever. Mm. I don't think he was lying, you know, that much. I think he just
really naive.
Yeah. And I think he just, you know, he wants it to happen so bad. He's willing it. You know, I think for now, you know, at this point, you know, he should understand that, no, we're not months away from this being done. I think originally he definitely believed that they were going to be able to do it. But, you know, I'm just, oh God, I'm so over this FSD stuff. I love, you know, ADAS systems. I love testing them out and everything, but this whole, this is the big one. Here in 6 months, that's right. Going to be the one that, Christ, I've heard it 10 times already. Just,
right.
You know, so no, I haven't driven it, Dom. Long answer.
Well, short question. Well, Jared sums it up really briefly here, and he does a pretty good job of it. So FSD takes off like a rocket from start, even on chill mode. And I've been running mine in chill mode too, and it's like kind of nuts. I think it's impressive with what it can do, but the acceleration and braking is annoying to me. Also here, same. Quit using it after a few days. I'm still trying out and testing in different things. We had heavy rains. We had inches and inches of rain the other night. I have a tree fell down in my yard, actually. It got so wet, and I was driving in that. And it did all right. I got little warning signs that it might be degraded somewhat, and it's like driving a little bit more cautiously and things. It was kind of interesting. It has improved quite a way. And so I'll let you know, Tom, when I think it's like ready for you to finally, you know, when they smooth out some of the, it's not really a smooth ride yet, but they've got a lot of the robotness out of it. So I thought that was really good.
I'm very happy with my Blue Cruise, my hands-free Blue Cruise. When I go on long drives, it's so comfortable. I mean, when Pete and I drove down to Florida, we had Blue Cruise on though, just about the whole way. I mean, it's, to me, that at this point is as good as it gets. I don't need the other stuff until it can do everything. Because honestly, it confuses me. Like when I had my Model 3, there were times where I almost had accidents, and that wasn't even with FSD because the car was trying to do things that it really can't do. So I'd like a clear line of knowing what I can do and what it can't do. So if I'm not paying attention, it won't operate outside of its bounds. Like just regular autopilot for me. Sometimes I was using it on back roads that you're not supposed to use it on. And it would perform so well that I would get lazy and forget that this can't do what it's supposed to do. And if I'm not paying attention, it'll blast right through a stop sign. So like, I like the Blue Cruise, what I have now for long haul driving on the secondary and tertiary streets. I'll drive the vehicle myself, thank you, until I can comfortably go in it and just say, take me here and nod off for a little bit.
Yeah, that is. I saw some of the conversation this week, obviously, since the CEO said that you were going to get more robo-taxi stuff on the 8th of the 8th. And part of the conversation I saw was people saying, well, look, the big prize is robo-taxi. And Elon Musk said in an interview with a blog or some fans, you know, that without it, Tesla's worth nothing, which is not true, but he is of...
hyperbole, if nothing else, right?
Yeah, he can say stuff like that, which is, you know, ridiculous. But and people saying, well, that's the robo-taxi is the prize. Everything else until then is of no use. And I couldn't disagree more, actually, because it's those motorway journeys that maybe you're doing a 2 or 3 hour stint, and when the car can take over, it really does save a lot of fatigue. And I'm sure we've all done those car journeys where you sort of your head starts to go and you come around and you haven't paid attention for the last, you know, half a mile. It's the same thing when you read a book and you think, I just haven't read the last page. Let me go back and read it again. Like that happens when you're driving as well. And I find that all of these systems that work well are on when you're doing high speed stuff, where normally you have to be so completely switched on to everything because you're making these tiny little motor movements all the times on your hand, like left a bit, right a bit, left a bit. When you can stop doing that and then just keep your eyes on the road, in the mirror, what's around you, I really, really find that it reduces my fatigue. When I'm driving around town, I don't really care about, I like driving. So I don't find that fatiguing, and I'm fine not paying for a system that can drive me at 20 miles an hour while I'd go do my errands. It's the other stuff that I find just brilliant, and any of those systems that can do it well, I think that's the big prize where we are now, you know, at least, and not trying to sort of wish our life away thinking, as Tom says, right, the next one's going to be it. Cause it inevitably it won't be.
True. Well, I'm making these videos anyway, just for the people who are interested, and you know, I kind of enjoy making them as well. So if you want to see where we're at right now, I encourage you to check out the Drive Electric with Dominic channel. And every new update, I try to put a new video up there. And so we're at 12.3.3 right now. And there's some people have gotten updates since then as well. So I keep looking at my phone, waiting for my next update, but not yet. So let's talk some news. The time is going, and I've wasted too much time talking about that. So this week, Mercedes introduced extensive updates to its 2025. Oh, shaken. Oh, state of charges, state of earthquake again.
Just kidding.
Oh, jeez.
I've been waiting all show to do that to you guys.
You really got me then. I hope you get a real aftershock now.
We did have one right before the show today.
You said you've had 50.
Over 50 in New Jersey. Yeah, since and they're getting milder and milder. But this morning, about a half an hour before the show, we heard a subtle boom in the background, and then just a little. My wife and I, Meredith's home today. We both felt it. So, but wow. I've been waiting for the right moment in the show to bust you guys.
Right.
All right. thanks, Tom. Yeah, you mentioned the aftershock before the show started on your thing. Yeah. So, you know, I was already thinking, okay, that's a possibility in my subconscious, right? So, you got me good. all right. So, Mercedes in the EQS 2025 EQS sedan. Don't call it a refresh. It's not a refresh. So Mercedes has replaced the front grille design, moving away from the smooth front that they have on the EQS with an embedded Mercedes stars. And they've put a few horizontal chrome strips as well as a vertical one in the middle to sort of mimic the S-Class, which is, you know, I guess really Mercedes' flagship sedan. It also gets the lower bumper from the AMG trim of the EQS. And it also gets the proper Mercedes star hood emblem, like standing up proud, not embedded into the hood. So I think that's kind of cool. I think it looks good. Like, I don't know. Maybe it seems kind of silly, this little you know, bit of ornamentation. But I, you know, for whatever reason, you know, I look at that and I think, oh, that's a proper looking car. Because I guess growing up, you know, all the cars had little stand-up ornaments on the end of the hood, but not a super important point. But so the battery is also bigger. It's 118 kilowatt hours, up from 108.4 kilowatt hours. The 2024 EQS sedan was rated for 352 miles in rural drive in the 450 plus. So this bigger battery should get it up to around, I think, like 380 or more or so miles. The regen braking system has also been improved. I guess the power levels have been increased, which they say should add extra range as well. I would think only a few miles really in a cycle, but Mercedes says it's also optimized the braking system to give it a better pedal feel via a modified brake force cylinder. The EQS has been criticized in the past for its squishy brake pedal feel. So hopefully that's much improved there. Mercedes would also like you know that the other vehicles that share the EVA2 platform will benefit from many of these same improvements. So that's the EQS SUV, the EQE sedan, and SUV. So Tom, it seems like Mercedes is not really happy with how the EQS has been performing against its competitors, like BMW i7 or the Lucid Air or whatever, and they're making some making changes ahead of the usual refresh. So like we say, often say, car purchases are emotional decisions, maybe even more so at this price level. So what do you think do you think the visual update is enough of a change, or do you think this 30-40 miles on top of a 350 mile range will be enough to attract buyers?
I don't know. I like the improvements. The bigger battery, the longer range is good. Hopefully the brake feel has been improved, but I don't think that necessarily was holding back the EQS in the past. You know, if they were able to get the EPA range rating up over 4, I think it would make a difference. But for most people, I think, you know, if they hear 330 and then they hear 370, like it's kind of the same thing. It begins with a three.
Right.
I clearly think that the styling is what's hurt them the most. And I have a little bit of, I guess, anecdotal proof on that. I was recently at a Mercedes dealership with a friend of mine who was getting a Mercedes, not an electric one. Mm-hmm. And I was talking to the salesman about EQS, and he basically was like, yeah, people don't like how it looks. They're like, they don't feel like it's a Mercedes, like it's, you know, a high class. A lot of people that buy Mercedes, it's a status symbol. And part of that is when you roll up, you know, you should be impressed. You know, you should impress people, you know, and the presence of the vehicle. And they just felt like, you know, they went so overboard with the aero that it took away its distinctive, you know, premium look. Right. And I guess they're trying to maybe improve that a little bit with this. I do think the grill looks a little bit nicer, but I want to see it in person. I love the concept EQS look, that front grill. It's actually like the banner picture on my Twitter account. In life, it just doesn't look great, in my opinion. And I think that's what's holding back the sales, not necessarily its performance. Even though when you do put it up against, say, the i7 and Lucid Air, for instance, Lucid beats it in many categories.
Right.
The i7, I think I kind of like driving the i7 better. I even like the interior of the i7 better.
Yeah, 7 is pretty sweet.
Yeah, it doesn't.
It's stiff competition up there.
Yeah, it's very stiff competition. And I don't think there's anything that like the EQS does better. Like clearly, like, well, this is why you buy it. You know, the Lucid has more range. So if you really want range and performance, even the Air is got it beat. It even has more. I think the Air has more cargo space and everything than the EQS. So there's not a lot of things that the EQS does better than its main competition, and it doesn't look great. So, you know, even the people that go to Mercedes dealerships every 3 years and just buy the latest, greatest car, I think a lot of them are looking at it and saying, nah, you know, I'll get the gas one. You know,
yeah, right? I'll pop the S-Class up on screen.
Okay.
Like, probably seems like what an S-Class should look like. And then if you're cross-shopping this, you know, the S-Class with the EQS, and it is, you know, it is conventional. And so you are starting to swim against the tide a little bit when it looks better. It does look better with the fake grill on the front and what have you. But that's what the buyers are going in to buy until now. Right. But no, smart
I just
move.
Think, Martin, sorry to interrupt you. I just think you immediately look at this and think Mercedes to me. Mm-hmm. And you don't with the EQS. Like, it could almost be any brand if you completely remove the badging and everything. And I think that's part of what hurts it. Like, people want people to know they're driving a Mercedes.
Yeah.
And you don't get that with the EQS. Sorry to interrupt you.
You know, and look, it stings, because this will have been the work of years and countless people and, you know, a huge amount of decisions to be made to have a car that looks like, well, I think with the grill, it looks better. So it stings. You got to take it on the nose. People walk into your dealerships and say, hey, I like how the S-Class looks more. And you can be as data-driven as you like. Well, it's more aero and the teardrop shape is important, yada, yada. And look, that is exactly the same as VW had with the first software that came out on the MEB platform, when I had a really early ID3, and it was pretty garbage. And I feel bad saying that, because someone has put in long days, long nights, you know, to ship this thing, to hit deadlines, and maybe even, you know, worked at the weekend and missed family, and they're getting this thing out, and then, you know, some idiot on the internet goes, well, this isn't very good. So it's tough to take it on the chin, but I think Mercedes have pointed out this is not a midlife refresh. This is not an update to the vehicle. And though it clearly is hardware-wise, the rear is different. The seats will recline at 38 degrees. Right. They've got the thing the same as the BMW, where the front passenger seat will then slide forward to give even more leg room. So they've made the rear more opulent.
I think it falls forward as well, that passive.
Yeah, so, and that's all pretty standard when you're in this price point as well, and you might not want it, but you have the option of paying for that package as well. So I think having it look a bit more like an S-Class, or putting some, I think on my podcast, I call it skeuomorphism. So, okay. like the original iPhones, the Notepad app had a leather bound icon, and you'd open it up, and the background was yellow, not white, and you had lines, and it was all about, hey, this is how you use a smartphone. It's like a notepad, and that all went. And I think that's maybe now that you've got to put fake grills on EVs, and some, not all buyers. By the way, I'm not saying all buyers. I'm just saying some buyers need it to have a line between where they are and where they're going to. And also, I think it looks better. So, right.
You know what I do like about the current EQS? It's used price.
Oh, right.
They are going down into the upper 50s in some places.
Wow. Okay.
We have to start considering them for battery bargains. Could you imagine picking up an EQS today for like $60,000? But they are. Right. The price has dropped like a rock.
Holy moly. I'm on the UK version of Auto Trader. So, change it from pounds. But that's that. Yeah, look at that's the 450 plus 108 kilowatt hour battery and 50,000 miles. Fine, it's barely running. 55 grand. Yeah. Ah!
Oh,
yeah. That's a 2-year-old car. That stings.
It's 100,000 new, right? It starts around
at least.
Grand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They'll have all had options ticked in some way. Mm-hmm. Unless it was for some reason a business purchase, but. They had to have the car they were given, but like
super deals. I mean,
50 grand is a lot of money. I'm not saying it's not, but
that's a lot of car, really. Looks aside, driving it aside from the that whole squishy brake feel thing that, did have some weirdness going on there. So hopefully that's really improved, but I don't know. I still like the i7 more. I gotta say,
the i7 is really special.
No, I do.
It's really special.
And so quite honestly, I would take a Lucid Air over it. I really would.
Mark Norman has a great i7 comment here. He saw his first one a few weeks ago. Love it. Need to chop the top off and make a cruiser. And I love that idea. I was just thinking of that thing like as a drop top. Man, that would be stunning. I think. Anyone? I wonder if anyone from BMW is watching us today. Anyway, if you are, there's an idea to bring to the head honchos. But let's move from Mercedes to another automaker making model updates that aren't refreshes. Ford has announced improvements to its Mustang Mach-E crossover. So the 2024 model year GT gets an optional performance upgrade that chops off half a second from the 0 to 60 time, making it quicker than a Tesla Model Y performance by two tenths of a second, so to 60 miles an hour. So it can do the 0 to 60 in 3.3 seconds as opposed to the 3.5 of the Tesla Model Y performance. It also does the quarter mile in like 11.8 seconds, which is very quick, and I think that's also quicker than the Tesla Model Y performance. So that's pretty good. So the upgrade is a combination of a few things. First of all Mach-E trims get this new rear motor designed in-house at Ford, and I'm pretty sure it's more efficient because all the trims of the Ford Mach-E get more range. The non-GT versions get 20 more miles of range, and the GT trims get 10 miles, which is pretty awesome. So they take that new motor and they combine that with some new powertrain thermal modeling and control algorithms to give the performance upgrade. It adds like 100 pound feet of torque, basically, and that improves your acceleration, of course. Ford has also made a few options standard in the GT trims. I think the performance seats, also the MagnaRide suspension and Brembo brakes. Right. And I'm not sure if I mentioned it here, the Rally, the Mustang, the Mach-E Rally, the really cool one, this with the suspension. It's like more for, not off-road necessarily, but dirt road or like a rally style car that gets the performance upgrade standard. So it'll have all the, I really want to drive that thing. The more I hear about it and watch it, it's, and with this new performance package, it's, striking me as it's going to be a really properly fun car to drive. Charging also got a boost. Man, they did a lot for this model year. It's pretty good. So it now charges 10 to 80% in 36.2 minutes. That's not like a great number, but it's still almost nine minutes faster than the 2023 Mach-E. So that's like a terrific improvement. I don't know. If Kyle was here, I would be asking him if he's ready to give the Mach-E another shot, because, you know, he tends to, you know, talk about the thermals. Kyle likes to drive it hard, and it would hit its thermal limit pretty early on previously, but it sounds like they've really addressed that now. So I don't know. Tom, you spent some time in the Mach-E, right?
Well, not this new one. I was invited to do like the press drive, but I had a decline. I had a something else that conflicted. So we still don't really know about the thermal improvement, you know. Yes, it's faster and everything, but that doesn't mean that it still doesn't hit the thermals early, you know, which I know will be a bugaboo for Kyle, but I think it's great. It's super. Getting the quarter mile down under 12 seconds is huge. When you're in the 11 seconds, 11.8 is super. And, you know, I mean, it's a Mustang. It should be a high performance vehicle. The GT was before, but now they're Ford's continuing to make improvements on it. I think it's great. You know, and I'd love to get one on a track. So Kyle did post here that Ford said they upgraded thermal control logic, but let's see, you know, he's got to get on track for a while to see what that translates to, you know?
Right. He says it comes with the GT performance upgrade. Right. It sounds like, I don't know, Kyle, do they still have like a two, like a GT and a GT performance, or is it all just like one?
No, they still have that, I'm pretty sure. Okay. GT and GT performance.
Okay. I could also ask Mach-E vloggers with us today. But yeah, they love the upgrade, but it's not in the cards financially right now. Yeah. Let's see.
Oh, they're saying just GT. They don't have GT performance. I thought they had both still.
Okay, just the GT. So they have one base GT, and Kyle's saying they have one base GT and one GT performance software.
Yeah, okay. So the hardware is the same, and you just pay to upgrade it, even after you've taken delivery.
Jace Kraft Miller, who does not work for Ford, I learned this week, says no GT anymore.
No.
I think it means more just performance.
Yeah.
Okay. Right.
So that simplifies it.
No more. So there's no more Ford Mustang Mach-E GT then? Okay. Yeah. I'm totally confused. All GT performance equipment is standard on GT. Right. Okay. All GT get MagnaRide too. Right. Which is great because you need that. That's the all have the suspension. Right. All right. Can you get the upgrade on the older Mach-E?
Probably not.
Probably not.
I wouldn't have thought so.
I don't think so. David Oliver is saying it is named GT Dom. Yeah. Thank you, sir. That's awesome. All right. So let's see, let's move on then, I guess. Anything else we want to say about that? I mean, that sounds pretty awesome for the GT. I mean, it's been selling really good. They lowered the price recently, and the prices were pretty good. I was looking at it's only like, I think it's like $500 more than the Tesla Model Y Performance. I'm not sure if it gets the $7,500 tax credit. I should have looked that up before.
Didn't it lose it?
So I think the Tesla might still have an advantage there, but there's lots of people who are looking for like a non-Tesla performance machine, and I don't know. I think this looks pretty good, and they're selling a bunch. Mach-E Vlog says, by the way, even premium Mach-E gets a performance boost 0 to 60 in 4.1 seconds, right? Because they all got the big juicy motors. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's great. That's good to see, and they produce those motors in-house design, which I think is important for automakers to really develop their own EV, IP, intellectual, you know, property, all that stuff. It's a big deal to have that in-house, in my opinion, at least. So moving on, but not very far, now might be a good time to buy a Ford F-150 Lightning. The pickup has been So they've whatever they've done, they've chopped a bunch off the price. So now the Ford XLT variant will cost $2,000 less at $62,995. The Lariat price tag gets $2,500 chopped off of it, so it's like $76,995. The Flash, this is a good one, is down $5,500 to $67,995. Well, the Pro, the work truck, and the Platinum, the top end spec, those ones have remained unchanged. And also, if you're a Tesla owner, they've also thrown a Tesla competitive conquest bonus cash incentive on the hood. So introduced on April 3rd, it concerns both the 2023 and 2024 model of the year of the F-150 Lightning. So you can get that $1,500 off. If you, for those who own or lease a 2000 or who come from a 2008 or newer Tesla, and that incentive will be available through July the 8th. So yeah, that's available for Tesla owners if they want to jump up to a Ford F-150 Lightning. So the Flash here is the trim that's getting all the big price cut, $5,500. Tom, do you know offhand what the what's special about that?
I honestly don't. I forgot. Okay. I know I read it when same it first here. Came out and everything, right. But no, if I were to start to give you a list, I would be leaving stuff out. So I'm not even going to try that. But yeah, right. That with this new price decrease, the $5,500, it absolutely is probably the play that I would go for if I were going to get a new Lightning right now. If I wouldn't take such a beating on the my existing one, trading it in or selling it, I'd consider it. But I'm happy with my Lariat the way it is now. It's I'm still loving it. 23,000 miles later, and it's doing good. Although I just got a recall notice for the rear tail light because it has it gets condensation in it. I guess some of them that were made. So I got to take mine for the first time to the dealer to get that taken care of soon.
Oh, interesting. Jace Kraftmiller is saying Flash trim is basically all the tech packages with BC and pack and extended Blue range Cruise. Battery.
Yeah.
What's the BC and pack?
Blue Cruise.
Blue Cruise, right. And Auto Park is the pack. No, that's another.
Phone as a key.
Phone as a key, right. Thank you. Yeah, I don't have all my acronyms.
And the extended
down,
range battery. Yeah.
Yeah, extended range battery. That one I got. That one I got. We're over our time. There's only one other little thing we should have mentioned, and Martin mentioned at the top that the Alfa Romeo Milano debuted in Europe this week. It's not coming to the U.S. unfortunately. It's coming as an all electric vehicle, but it's also there's also going to be a plug-in hybrid, I guess, with a 1.2-liter three-cylinder turbocharged engine. It has a 54 kilowatt-hour battery. I think the range in the real world is going to be like around 200 miles. It's front-wheel drive, 156 horsepower front-mounted electric motor. There's a Veloce trim that boosts the output up to 240 horsepower. Yeah, charging is 10 to 80% in less than 30 minutes, it says, but the peak power is only 100 kilowatts. So that's kind of interesting. It's got to have a pretty flat
150.
Oh, is it?
No.
I don't know. You can double check my numbers, yeah, because I wrote that down at 3 in the morning last night. So
I might be wrong.
I think I was cutting and pasting at that point, though.
Okay. All right. Cool. That is the... you don't get all the Stellantis cars, unfortunately, but the Citroën C4 and the Fiat 600 and the Jeep Avenger and the Peugeot E2008, they all have the same battery, same motor, same platform. Never going to knock your socks off, but it's very solid. And honestly, for the family buyer that's paying a monthly fee on this, but want something a bit different, a bit interesting, then look, this is it's a, and it's all really well proven stuff on the platform as well. So they just have to come along and make it look alpha-y and then tune it so that it's has at least something different in the tuning. to say that they've done what they've done. I thought it had a hundred. I thought the three numbers were almost going up in the 50s. So it was like 54 kilowatt hour battery, 100 kilowatt DC fast charge peak rate. And then the original motors on this platform had 100. It was 50, 100, 100. It was a 100 kilowatt motor. I thought they upgraded it recently to 150 kilowatt motor. But I'll double check that as well.
I don't know if you can hear my keyboard clicking here in the background. Utilizing rapid charging, DC rapid charging up to 100 kilowatts, the AC Milano Elettrica takes only 27 minutes to charge from 20 to 80.
It's a small battery, though, so.
Right, 50 kilowatt hours, I believe.
Yeah, 54. Like
they cherry-picked 20 to 80.
I wish they – I just wish nobody – I mean, come on. It's always 10 to 80. Right. If you see anything that's not 10 to 80, it's being done for a reason.
Right. No, on the press release, to their credit, I believe on their press releases, it does say 20 to 80% state of charge takes less than 30 minutes. So I was just reading another
– okay.
I'm not sure where that 20 to 80 thing I read came from. It was another – it just came up in my search results.
Yeah. You said it said 10 to 80 on their press release? Because you just said 20 – it said 20 to 80.
Right. I had read something, somebody else's little thing on a little quick internet search. I saw it said 20 to 80, but on the official number here is 10 to 80.
It says 10.
In less than 30 minutes. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. But I don't, but it's not coming to the US. I'm not sure if 200, because here range is so important and range, the whole price range kind of equation, I'm not sure it's compelling enough. It's great style though, so it could sell on that for some buyers, but I guess
this is the big one. So the one you saw earlier in the show was the smaller one. It was the girl.
It's the same cat.
No, she's petite and cute and small. This is the boy and he's huge. And also really stupid and daft, and I've just been scratching my feet for the last 20 minutes. Because I've got no socks on, and he's been scratching me. This one's massive. So, but we'd probably feed him too much.
All right. So I guess we'll put a bow on this episode and call it a morning. That brings us to the end of our show. If you have any questions or comments, please leave them below or get in touch with us on the social media platform of your choice. Don't forget, if you like the show, please give us a thumbs up. Click subscribe and tap that bell icon for notifications. And as Martin mentioned earlier, if you can, share the show with your friends and even family. I don't know. Feel free to share the show. We could really use all the help we can get here. Thank you all very much for joining us, and we'll see you again very soon. Ciao.